sometimes controversial, always politically incorrect, and pro-life without exception, without compromise, and without apology. It's the Pro-Life America Podcast with your hosts, Sarah Waits, and the president of Life Dynamics, Mark Crutcher.
Hey guys, welcome to the show. As you heard, I am Mark Crutcher, and as you also heard, lurking on the other side of the table is Sarah Waits.
Hello, everyone.
And she's a big lurker, as we all know.
That makes me sound like I've got some sort of record out there somewhere.
No, it's like a alligator. You know, you see them, and they're just kind of lurking slowly. Moving around through the water.
You say lurker, I think of somebody who hides in someone's bushes, spying on them or something.
Well, you may do that too, for all I
know. No.
Hey, before we get started, I want to bring up something here. This makes me so angry. Clean up my language here a little bit. A Senator Tammy Duckworth has introduced legislation that would require employers to provide 3 days of paid leave for women following a pregnancy loss, a failed adoption, or a surrogacy arrangement, or an unsuccessful fertility procedure, or related medical diagnosis. I guess that's just about anything that could...
Anything under the sun related to pregnancy and children.
Right.
Yeah. Well, as far as the miscarriage or the adoption thing goes, especially miscarriage, I completely support that.
Well, you got several problems with that. My wife and I went through several miscarriages, and I know what a tragedy it is. Mm-hmm. Before we were able to adopt Sheila. We went through several failed adoptions where women were saying they were going to place their baby for adoption, then they changed their mind, which they had every right to do. Does that mean I get 3 days off because somebody changed their mind about allowing me
to adopt? You have the opportunity to take off.
Or a surrogacy arrangement fails. What does that mean? I mean, they try to get somebody to be a surrogate and they refuse to do it, so it failed, so I get time off. Unsuccessful fertility procedure.
Of course, I think any legislation is defined by how well it's actually written out.
I understand, obviously, this loss. And I know, having gone through it with my wife and myself, how devastating it is. But the thing that angers me about this particular situation here is this woman is grieving. She started this on a personal level because she had a miscarriage. Mm-hmm. We had a baby that was lost here. That's a tragedy.
Yeah.
Whether it's miscarriage or abortion or whatever. And I understand that. And we should be sympathetic for that baby that was lost. I have no sympathy for this woman. This woman is a raging pro-abort. And for her to sit here and talk about how she is devastated by this pregnancy loss, when she's one of these people that pushes for these pregnancies to be intentionally lost, for these babies to be butchered, mm-hmm. I know it may sound harsh. I have no sympathy for her. None. Zero. Despite having been through this with my own wife and having seen how devastating it is for both parties, for the husband and the wife.
I have sympathy, but I do feel like it is a huge, huge hypocritical thing to say, okay, over here it was a child, but if you have it aborted, it's no big deal. It's not a child. It's just a clump of cells.
It's just a bunch of...
You can't rationalize those two viewpoints.
No, you can't. This is totally irrational. Mm-hmm. And what it shows is that if she's grieving over this baby, then she's admitting that it was a baby that she was pregnant with.
Yeah.
You can't grieve over a clump of cells. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a cancerous thing removed off my arm many, many years ago. I didn't go home and grieve over it. It was a bunch of cells that they cut off.
Yeah.
If that's the way you view pregnancy, don't now come around here and telling me how grief-stricken you are over having a baby that died. Being pro-life means you're pro-life for all babies, not just for your own.
Yeah.
This woman is a hypocrite of the first order, and she's trying to get Republicans on board, and she probably will because she'll go in there and play the victim. That's what the left is particularly good at, playing the victim. And she's asking for $45 million to fund this program.
Is this a government program? I thought the deal was just that the law was going to require...
No, she's calling for additional government services as well.
Oh, okay.
Support resources and public information related to pregnancy loss. And it would cost $45 million and be given to the National Institutes of Health.
Well, the question I have now is, why weren't they doing that before? Why is it taking this all of a sudden to have resources for women who miscarry? Is it because possibly it puts a bad light on abortion?
I don't know, but this is a disgrace.
Either these resources already exist and perhaps this $45 million is not justified, or they've been ignoring this for the greater good of abortion for all these years. Which one is it?
I don't know. Anyway, you have some stuff you wanted to talk about.
You know, last, I want to say 5 years, Nazi has become part of the vocabulary that you hear almost on a daily basis.
Yep.
And I apologize for people who are coming to this hoping for a respite. But rest assured, we're talking about actual Nazis today.
Right.
And I've always found it interesting how history, especially those connected to the pro-choice movement, has tried to gloss over and ignore and sweep under the rug the big connections between the reproductive health movement, if you want to call them, the population control movement, primarily at that time was Planned Parenthood. They were the ones on the scene.
Primarily in America. Right.
Yeah, in America.
Right.
And then the Nazi Party.
Right.
Because most people don't know that there was this big connection
between
Hitler the two.
Well, Hitler made it clear that he got his ideas for eugenics.
Mm-hmm.
That they put into practice in Germany from the United States.
Yes.
He made no bones about that.
And he even went so far as to praise certain American eugenicists for their books that they had published and ideas that they published.
Absolutely. We talk about this in MOF 21. Mm-hmm. We found all the data on this, and it was amazing what we were able to find.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was not just a tenuous link between Planned Parenthood and the American eugenics movement and the American birth control movement and all this. And American population control. Population control is kind of the umbrella that all this stuff falls under.
Yeah.
It was not just a tenuous relationship. These people had personal relationships.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, there was an international conference on population control, reproductive health care, all this other stuff. And it was headed up by Margaret Sanger of Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, you're talking about the World Population Conference in Switzerland that she arranged in 1927.
They had practicing Nazis as spokesmen there. People that she knew were involved in the Nazi Party.
And this wasn't just some sort of coincidence. In the American Birth Control Review, which was the official publication for her organization, she featured this conference and their attendees and the speakers in that newsletter.
And lauding praise on all these Nazis that are pushing the eugenics movement in Germany, which they had devised from the eugenics movement in America. You know, it's hard to imagine now, but in the United States, over 30 states at one point or another had actual eugenics boards, state eugenics boards. And these were closely tied with American Nazis and with people that were tied to the Nazis in Germany.
You think that this would be a fundamental part of American history that you're taught about? Because this is a significant operation that went on for decades.
Right.
I never learned about this until I was in college. Right. And not through my college classes, mind you. It was from watching My Alpha 21.
Right.
Wasn't it estimated that from the states that published the data about how many people were subjected to sterilization?
Forced sterilization, or coerced.
It wasn't always forced.
Sometimes
it was coerced.
They didn't even know it. Women were sterilized without even knowing it.
Yeah. Was it over 60,000 people? And some of the youngest that were sterilized were around 10 years old.
Right.
Children.
Right.
This wasn't just adults. This was just children as well.
Well, we had a person interviewed in MAFA 21.
Elaine Riddick.
Riddick, who was raped and became pregnant at 14. And when she was giving birth, they sterilized her without telling her.
Yeah.
And then later on, she got married and started trying to have a family and found out she was sterile. That's how she found out. And then goes back through the medical records and find out that they sterilized her. And by the way, most of these forced sterilizations are secret sterilizations. Guess what race the people were that these were done on?
Let me guess.
Yeah, overwhelmingly
African-American
women.
Yeah.
One of the things we found out, the eugenics board in Arkansas, just using one example, was actually run out of the Planned Parenthood office, run by the same people. Cornish, I think, was a woman that ran the thing. These people were eugenicists in the same way that the Nazis were eugenicists. The links between, and we're not going to get into all the details.
No, we've got some names here that we'll talk about, a few people that's listed in MAFA 21. But first, one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this, occasionally from time to time, you will hear somebody, usually who is very pro-choice and liberal, who will say that Hitler was pro-life.
Well, that's nonsense. First off, when the Nazis took over out of the Weimar Republic, abortion was already illegal in Germany. But the Nazis called a conference together to set out their eugenics policies based on what they were learning from American eugenicists. And what they did was they did make abortion illegal for Aryan women. But if you were not Aryan, meaning white,
or if you were Polish, Czech, or Jewish,
yeah, or if you didn't fit that Aryan classification, abortion was perfectly legal. And then as time went on, it went from being legal to being mandated.
Yeah.
And you could be executed for failing to have an abortion.
And it wasn't just forced abortions. They also did forced sterilizations.
Forced sterilizations, just like we did here in the United States.
Yeah.
Let's also remind people that, you know, when you think about the German Holocaust, you naturally think about the victims being Jewish because the overwhelming majority of them were. But when the Nazi Holocaust began, the first group they went after were blacks. That was the first group that they actually went after. And they basically wiped out most of them. They passed all these laws that if you were a white German and you had a sexual relationship with a black German, you could be executed for that.
But yeah, there was 500,000 abortions annually in Germany under the Third Reich.
Yeah, this nonsense that Hitler was pro-life.
I don't know where this stuff comes from.
I don't either.
It's really weird stuff, and it just pops up every once in a while.
Right. Yeah, this is pure nonsense that Hitler was some anti-abortion, pro-life crusader or something. It's these people are idiots that believe that. But a good person to read about is Madison Grant. He was one of the founders of the American eugenics movement.
Yeah.
And he was a hero of Hitler's.
In 1934, Hitler sent a letter to American eugenicist Leon Whitney, who was also, incidentally, published in the American Birth Control Review.
So, and I mean, spoke at their events. All right.
Complimenting him on a book that Whitney wrote called The Case for Sterilization. In the book, Whitney advocated for purging of, quote, quote, slum elements and, quote, quote, weeding out of the population garden. He even advocated for sterilizing the lowest fourth of the population because some of them may be too stupid to comprehend or carry out the simple methods of contraception, is what he said.
And these are the heroes
of
Margaret Sanger.
And Hitler.
And Hitler and Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's important for people to understand. People might look back here and say, well, you know, that was a different time and people were, and maybe Margaret
Don't give me that garbage. No.
You know, we're sitting here watching statues of people that lived 200 years ago being torn down, right?
Yeah. And Margaret Sanger's bust was sitting in the Smithsonian Struggle for Justice exhibit. Her bust was there among Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks.
And this woman was an avowed racist and was leading all these eugenics things that targeted blacks.
Listen to what she said. She said, "The eugenics and civilization value of birth control is becoming apparent to the enlightened and the intelligent.
Right.
The campaign for birth control is not merely of eugenic value, but is practically identical an ideal with the final aims of eugenics."
Right. In other words, the Nazis. And, you know, people don't want to hear this because it does cast a bad light on America. But you got to let the chips fall where they may. And these people were mainstream eugenicists at the time, and nobody seemed to care.
Yeah.
And you even had major publications in America lauding Hitler in the early days, before the war came along, when all he was doing was his eugenic stuff. Time magazine, we show a picture of the Time magazine article in Alpha 21. They're praising Hitler. They're saying, this is a forward-thinking, you know, we're going to make humanity better by getting rid of all the, what they call dysgenic types. That's what Margaret Sanger referred to him as. And, of course, this is back when Planned Parenthood was called the American Birth Control League.
Yeah, let's talk about why they changed their name.
Yeah, well, because they were pushing eugenics through the American Birth Control League.
Many of the American Eugenics Society members were also involved with Planned Parenthood, whether Sanger published their writings in the Birth Control Review, or they were on the board.
Right,
or
they shared speakers, and they shared events together. But anyway, these people made no bones about the fact of what their goals were. The problem that they encountered, and this is back when it was the American Birth Control League, the problem that they encountered was that when the Nazis took over in Germany, they started actually implementing these programs. And when that happened,
it went from ideas to
to this is really happening.
Reality.
And the public started looking at that and thinking, wait a minute, this is making me a little queasy. And they did research and found out that people were very uncomfortable with terms like birth control and population control, things like the American Birth Control League. So they changed their name to Planned Parenthood.
And because of their ties to the Nazi Party.
To the Nazis, right. And it's similar to what happened after the war with IG Farben. IG Farben was a chemical company, we've talked about this before, that helped the Nazis develop the gas chambers. And IG Farben also produced the gas, Zyklon B, that was used in those gas chambers. At the end of the war, now they're tied to the Holocaust.
Nazi Holocaust,
Their engineers helped design the gas chambers. So they're looking at obviously going out of business. Nobody's going to want to buy IG Farben products with that history. So IG Farben changed its name, much like Planned Parenthood changed from the American Birth Control League to Planned Parenthood for PR reasons. IG Farben did the same thing. They became Hurt, AG. And Hurt survived. They're a gigantic international pharmaceutical company today with subsidiaries in countries all over the world, including the United States. Yeah. One of those subsidiaries is Roussel-Uclof in France. They're the people who developed RU486. Matter of fact, RU stands for Roussel-Uclof 486 for April of 1986 when they released it. So in other words, the same company that produced the gas for the Nazi gas chambers produced RU-46 for the American death camps that's being used today. It is chilling.
Let's go on and talk about a couple of the players, because I guarantee you some of these people, most people have never heard of, and they played important roles.
Right.
So, for example, one of the people that Margaret Sanger published was a guy named Eugen Fischer. So Eugen Fischer was one of the leaders of a concentration camp in South Africa.
Let's stop right there.
Okay.
People need to understand something.
Yeah.
The model for the Nazi death camps, the concentration camps in Germany, came from Eugen Fischer's concentration camps in Africa, in the Congo. They were forced labor camps. When they were through working these people, they killed execute them.
Yeah.
And Eugen Fischer was the guy. And he was also a speaker at this conference that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
That Margaret Sanger
Margaret
invited
Sanger's
him.
World Population Conference, yeah.
Right. He was a speaker there.
He also served on the committees that planned the sterilizations of black citizens that came under Nazi rule during the war.
Right.
He was also one of the first Nazi scientists to be publicly affiliated with the Carnegie-founded eugenics laboratory in New York. And he was put in charge of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, where Nazi programs for racial purity were developed.
Right. Well, and that facility in New York is still there. Cold Spring Harbor, New York is still around from what I understand. We were able to get some information from them back when we were doing MAFA 21. They didn't know who we were, but they gave us some good information. We actually were able to get a video that no one had ever seen. It had very small circulation back during the Second World War, right before the Second World War, in American schools, in American elementary and junior high schools. And we were able to actually get a copy of that. We got it from a guy in Canada that was affiliated with the Eugenics Record Office in Cold Spring Harbor, New York. But anyway, yeah, these people are all mobbed up together, and there's hundreds of them.
Yeah, another one that's worth mentioning is Harry Laughlin. Now, he was an official with both the American Eugenics Society and the American Birth Control League. And in 1928, the American Birth Control League, which again became later Planned Parenthood, their publication published his plan for using forced sterilization to eliminate those who might, quote, produce degenerate offspring.
Guess who that would be?
Yeah.
I'll give you one hazard one guess on that.
And in 1936, he led the effort to distribute an English-language version of a Nazi eugenics film, and with the help of two other American eugenics organizations, wrote to 3,000 biology teachers at high schools across the country.
That's the film we got.
Urging them to show the film
to
their students.
Right.
Laughlin was later praised in a Nazi newspaper and awarded an honorary degree for all of his work.
Right.
And I think one of the people that we cannot just not mention is Lothrop Stoddard.
Right.
Because he was the director of the American Birth Control League and a writer for the American Birth Control Review.
And a Klansman.
Yeah, the Cyclops, whatever position that
Grand
is.
Grand Cyclops, Exalted Cyclops.
Something weird like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a Cyclops of his state chapter for the Klan.
Right. One of Margaret Sanger's buddies.
One of her buddies. He even went to Nazi Germany for 4 months in 1939, met Hitler, met Heinrich Himmler, and attended one of their eugenics courts. When a class on race was introduced at, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, Halle University in Germany, the instructor stated that the class was modeled on the philosophies of American eugenicists like Madison, Grant, and, drumroll please, Lothrop Stoddard.
Well, he wrote the book on the threat, as he perceived it, to white America.
Yeah, wasn't it the book you're talking about, The Rising Tide of Color Against White World Supremacy?
Right. He wrote that book. That was his publication. You know, nowadays you hear all this stuff about white supremacists, about people who were not white supremacists.
Yeah.
And the real ones escape.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about these guys. We're still shelling out hundreds of millions of dollars to Planned Parenthood.
I think we need to finish off by talking about Joseph Mengele.
Yeah, let's talk about Mengele for a moment. This was the what's called the Angel of Death.
Mm-hmm. He was the most active of the SS doctors at Auschwitz, and he was in charge of a lot of the horrible, horrible experimentations that were done in the camps.
Especially on twins, mm-hmm. twin children.
Yeah.
And they would go in and do horrible things to these little kids and then not do anything to the twin and gauge them and see how what the difference was, because you had a control if you have twins.
Yeah.
This man was as thoroughly evil as anybody who ever lived on this earth.
And they dubbed him the Angel of Death for that reason.
Now, his family was extremely wealthy. Mm-hmm. And after the war, they were able to get him out of Europe, and he disappeared. Mossad, the Israelis, looked for him mm-hmm. all over the world, never found him while he was alive. And it was later discovered, after getting out of Europe, he earned his living in Argentina and Chile and some other
Buenos Aires.
Mm-hmm. I think he's buried, actually, in Buenos Aires, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Or Argentina, one or the other. He earned his living as an abortionist. That's how he made his living. He was an abortionist. He couldn't get out of the death merchant business. We were going to start the Joseph Mengele Award, and you could give it every year to somebody like Leroy Carhart, or somebody might get it one year, and yeah. you know, Warren Hearn might get it the next year. It's tempting for people to look back and say, oh, yeah, that was a different time, and these were different people, and mores were different then than they were now. But when you look at Planned Parenthood today, mm-hmm. and you say, well, that's not the same group of people. They still worship Margaret Sanger. Mm-hmm. They've never distanced themselves from her.
Well, I don't think it's been anybody until Alexis McGill, who's publicly said, you know what? Yeah, this is pretty bad. And they're talking about distancing themselves from Margaret Sanger. But the only thing that I know is that they were scheduled to take Margaret Sanger's name off of the clinic in New York. Whether right. or not they've done that or not, I'm not sure. And I think I read somewhere that Margaret Sanger's bust may or may not have been moved from the struggle of justice. It's probably in a hallway somewhere, but you know, still.
It's too little too late.
Yeah. For years, they were making excuses for Margaret Sanger and saying, well, she might have been a little bit racist. But yeah. you know, all these other things she did over here right. far outweigh that. It's right. small potatoes.
So what if you came out and said, well, what about Stonewall Jackson?
Yeah.
You know, Stonewall Jackson was a
different set of standards.
Confederate general.
Yeah.
But he was also a guy that risked being hung mm-hmm. to teach black kids how to read and write. You know, Stonewall Jackson was the one who said, if one of our arguments for slavery and for bringing these people from Africa is that we can make Christians out of them, that mm-hmm. we can witness to them, then how do we do that if we prevent them from learning how to read and write? I think it was in Tennessee. You could be hung if you were white and you were teaching blacks how to read and write. You yeah. could be hung for that. Mm-hmm. And he did it. And he did it openly, and he challenged them on it. So why don't we say, okay, on one hand, he was a Confederate general, but on the other hand, he did some good. We don't say that.
No.
Nobody says that.
No.
And I'm not saying that we should. I'm just saying that let's have one standard. Mm-hmm. And whatever standard we're going to apply to Stonewall
exactly.
Jackson or Robert E. Lee.
It needs to be consistent.
Right. Mm-hmm. Or whoever. We're talking about changing the name of Fort Hood mm-hmm. because John Bell Hood was a Confederate general.
Yeah.
I don't know where all this is going to end.
No.
But it's outrageous what's happening here.
Well, I'm not saying we praise evil people or give them pedestals, but I will say it is naive to fail to recognize that people are a mixture of bad and good.
Yeah, like I'm saying, let's just use the same standard here.
Yeah.
But the thing I want to encourage people to do, because we have just touched on the tip of the iceberg here.
Oh, yeah.
You need to go watch Maffa 21 if you haven't. Mm-hmm. And you can order the DVD from us, or you can watch it for free online. You can go to Maffa21.com, mm-hmm. but watch that segment on the Nazis, because yeah. it's very interesting.
I say watch the whole thing. You know,
yeah,
like I say,
thing,
this is stuff that really needs to be taught in classrooms, and it right. really isn't. And the inescapable truth is that birth control, abortion, all of this is permanently tied to eugenics.
It is eugenics.
The two go hand in hand, and right. you can't say, I want to take this without this over here.
Right.
You nope. can't have it.
If you get one, you get the other one.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, you know, I've told you before, I boxed a little in high school in Golden Gloves when I was very young. Mm-hmm. And I remember this kid, he wanted to get into boxing. Mm-hmm. But he said, but I don't want to get hurt. I don't want to get, you know, hit.
No, he didn't.
Right. Oh, yeah. He said, I don't want to get hurt. And I don't want to get, you know.
That's like saying, I want right. to play baseball, but I'm not going to do any running.
Yeah. Or I want to race NASCAR.
Yeah.
But I don't want to take a chance on getting in a wreck. Well, you're not taking a chance. You're taking a certainty of getting in yeah. a wreck.
Well, he was looking into the wrong hobby there.
Wrong hobby. But if you're going to get involved in boxing, you're going to get hurt.
Yep.
You're going to get hurt. This is the reason I got out of it, because One thing I discovered about boxing, you know, if you play tennis and you're not very good at it, mm-hmm. you can have a lot of fun still.
Well maybe. But
if you box and you're not good at it, it's not any fun at all.
It's no, not any you're fun. Having a bad day.
It's not any fun. Well, I remember my coach telling me, because I had a good record to start with, then I mm-hmm. lost some. And then I fought a kid that was in my weight class that was the state champion in Golden Gloves the year before. Mm-hmm. And he beat me like a sharecropper beats a mule. And I was not happy about this.
Oh, you weren't?
Yeah. And my coach said, look, shame. Mark, you got to be ready. He said, you're going to have fights that you get beat up worse than that you win. So
you're like, say what?
I think, okay, I'm going to go off and do something else. And that's when I
take up knitting.
No, I started racing motorcycles, which in the long run, didn't turn out a whole lot better for me. But nonetheless, again, go to watch Mafia 21, order mm-hmm. a DVD or watch it for free, whatever you want to do. But you need to watch that segment for sure.
And get your friends to watch.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And speaking of getting your friends to do stuff, while you're at it, tell them to come listen to the Pro-Life America podcast. You know, it's information like this that really needs to get out. And also, make sure you go follow the podcast so you don't miss any episodes, and you can go back and listen to the other ones as well. We're on most podcast platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Podcast Addict, CastBox.
All the biggies.
We're on a lot of platforms. They're clamoring for us.
They're clamoring for us to get on there. Anyway, get all your friends. Until next Thursday, mm-hmm. remember, Life Dynamics is not here to put up a good fight.
Nope, we're here to win.
Because winning is how the killing stops. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye, guys.